Hi, this is Debbie Mayer in Hudson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 on your radio dial or streaming 24/7 at WGXC.org.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowan Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show on Wednesday, January 5th. And today we will hear from Rehabilitation Through the Arts Program Director Joe Giardina. Rehabilitation Through the Arts is a series of workshops for people in prison in theater, music, dance, visual arts, writing, poetry, and more. We'll hear all about it. This morning, we'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Tasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County Emergency Management Office is no longer a part of the Sheriff's Office. The Columbia County Board of Supervisors January 3rd approved a resolution transitioning the Emergency Management Office from a department under the control of the County Sheriff's Office to an independent agency. That organizational structure had been in effect since the EMO was established in 2011. The vote this week now puts the office under the control of the Board of Supervisors, Chair Matt Morrell. Quote, we did have several meetings with the sheriff-elect, unquote, the Stockport Republican Morrell said, quote, and we did have discussions to try to answer everyone's questions. That was a month and a half that we delayed this, unquote. The timing of the resolution coming so close to the election of a new sheriff, Donald Kraft, drew the concern of several supervisors. Supervisors took a roll call vote on the resolution. The resolution passed using the board's weighted vote provision and is based on the population of each municipality. According to the weighted point scale, the resolution carried with the final tally 2,191 in favor and 1,344 against. According to Roger Hannigan Gilson, writing in the Times Union, Kraft, a Democrat, is opposed to the change. quote, "I'm still in opposition to that move, and that will continue until the end of time," unquote, Kraft said after the vote. Quote, "I don't have enough data here to support it, and I haven't been afforded the opportunity to review any data. Today's literally my first business day in office," unquote. Kraft said his office would be following up to determine if there are, quote, "any violations about how this was done," unquote, he said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that former Governor Andrew Cuomo continues to face few legal repercussions for the many allegations that led to his resignation. On January 3rd, the paper reported that the Albany County District Attorney's Office is expected to drop a forcible touching complaint against Cuomo. The former governor was scheduled in Albany City Court on January 7th for a misdemeanor charge alleging that he groped a 33-year-old female aide in December 2020 at the executive mansion. Two other district attorneys recently announced they would also not pursue criminal charges against Cuomo for alleged inappropriate conduct with women. Cuomo had previously said he, and I quote, "never inappropriately touched anybody, and I never propositioned anybody, and I never intended to make anyone feel uncomfortable," end quote. Also on January 3rd, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office informed Cuomo's former attorney that it had ended its investigation into the administration's oversight of nursing homes during the COVID-19 pandemic. Elkin Abramowitz, who had represented Cuomo's office at the probe, said, and I quote, "I was told that after a thorough investigation, as we have said all along, there was no evidence to suggest that any laws were broken," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Mike Guizdala reports in the Troy Record that Representative Paul Tonko's memories of an armed attempt to overthrow the U.S. government 1 year later. On January 6th last year, an armed mob, directed there by former President Donald Trump, delayed the counting of electoral votes. The U.S. Capitol was ransacked for the first time since the War of 1812. A police officer was beaten, a rioter was shot, and three others died during the rampage. Tonko described what he saw. Quote, "One of my colleagues was with my staffer, Kate. She had just had knee surgery. Another colleague was flat out on the floor hyperventilating. People were really stressed as they were trying to figure out how quickly can we get to that exit door, then realizing that you had to go down several sets of stairs to make your way to the tunnel that connects the Rayburn office building to the House chamber to the Capitol building. It was all of that happening with great intensity and a lack of direction, basically because it was an unusual set of circumstances," unquote, he said. In the long interview, the congressperson who represents Albany County does not mention holding the coup plotters or rioters accountable. Quote, "As we approach the first anniversary of the attack on the Capitol, it's important for us, I believe, to come forward in a united way that enables us to put first the country, to make certain that we all work together toward a common goal, to make certain that our democracy, our republic, that was challenged in a very powerful and forceful way that produced death and destruction, and the attempt to undo a process, all of those dynamics need to be addressed. And I think that as we go forward, I would hope that we could do this out of love for country, respect for country, and a sense to make us an even stronger voice for freedom and opportunity," unquote, Tonko said. Read more about the story in the Troy Record.
Bernadette Hogan reports in the New York Post that Governor Kathy Hochul plans to propose term limits and a ban on statewide elected officials being able to earn outside income. Hochul also wants to amend the state's constitution to set limits of two consecutive terms for statewide elected officials. The proposal to ban outside income comes after ex-Governor Andrew Cuomo took in $5.1 million on his American Crisis book deal, alleging using state employee help. Hochul said on January 3rd, and I quote, "I want people to believe in their government again. With these bold reforms, we will ensure New Yorkers know their leaders work for them and are focused on serving the people of this state," end quote. The state's ethic board voted in early December for Cuomo to return his $5.1 million profit to the state or his publisher. An investigative report released by the Democrat-majority State Assembly Judiciary Committee on November 22nd said Cuomo, and I quote, utilize state resources and property, including work by executive chamber staff, to write, publish, and promote his book, end quote. Term limits, her other proposal that would require an amendment to the state's constitution, are popular among some politicians to limit concentration of power, but others say it takes choices away from voters. Read more about this story in the New York Post.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that thousands of people in New York State prisons received false positive drug test results, leading to unnecessary punishment, according to the results of an investigation made public January 3rd by State Inspector General Lucy Lang. The punishments imposed included solitary confinement, longer sentences, delayed parole hearings, and the revocation of family visitation privileges. The policies were enacted in 2019 and used tests that ultimately were found to be unreliable and produced widespread false positives, Lee said. The investigation also determined that the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision failed to fully investigate the reason behind a spike in positive test results after the test by Microgenics began to be used in January 2019. Use of the testing protocol ended in August 2019. The Inspector General also alleges that docs failed to take corrective action after discovering the high rate of false positives. Lee's office was first alerted to a potential problem in September 2019. The investigation led to 2,500 disciplinary records being expunged, as well as privileges being reinstated. At the same time, the use of solitary confinement has been restricted as a punishment for testing positive in a drug test. A spokesperson for the Corrections Department pointed to prison officials alerting the Inspector General to problems with Microgenics testing and potential false positives. Read more about the story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Andrea Mako reports in Porcupine Soup that the towns of New Baltimore, Durham, and Greenville voted just before December 31st to not take in cannabis revenues and block retail sales and consumption lounges in their parts of Greene County. Greenville and Durham town boards voted December 30th to opt out, while New Baltimore officials took their action on December 28th. New York legalized cannabis everywhere in April 2021, with towns and villages having until December 31st to decide whether to opt out of sales and/or consumption lounges. Towns can later vote to opt in to sales and lounges, but they had only until December 31st to opt out. In Greene County, Ashland, Cairo, the town and village of Hunter, Jewett, Prattsville, and Windham have opted out of both retail sales and cannabis lounges, according to the Rockefeller Institute of Government website tracking the issue. In Catskill, retail sales will be allowed, but consumption lounges will only be allowed in the village, but not in the town of Catskill. Everywhere else, cannabis sales will be allowed. In Columbia County, the village of Chatham, Claremont, and the village of Kinderhook and Livingston have opted out of both. Ancrum, Copeg, and the town of Kinderhook and the village of Valencia will allow retail sales, but not lounges. Everywhere else in Columbia County will allow both. These local laws to opt out are subject to permissive referendum, meaning residents can bring the issue to a public vote with enough signatures on a petition. Tremaine Wright, the head of the state's Cannabis Control Board, said that licenses for the first recreational cannabis dispensaries won't likely be issued until spring of 2023 at the earliest. And you can read more about this story in Porcupine Soup.
And the Ravenna News Herald is reporting that New York Attorney General Letitia James last month issued a consumer alert to New Yorkers about potential price gouging of over-the-counter COVID-19 testing products for at-home use, as well as other in-demand essential products. The alert comes during a significant surge of COVID-19 cases, which has caused an increased demand for at-home testing kits. The AG's office has received complaints of COVID-19 testing products being sold at double or triple their retail price. Standard Binoxnal brand test kit can cost between $14 and $25 for a package of two tests. However, there have been reports of the same product being sold for more than $40 and up to $70 per package. State law prohibits merchants from taking unfair advantage of consumers by selling goods or services that are vital to their health, safety, or welfare for a, quote, unconscionably excessive, unquote, price. 2021, legislation was passed that substantially strengthened the AG's ability to bring charges against anyone who violates the statute. James said, quote, if New Yorkers see exorbitant price increases on testing kits or other goods vital and necessary for health, safety, and welfare, they are encouraged to report it to my office immediately. And fraudsters are on notice that if they attempt to price gouge during this new surge, we will not hesitate to take action, unquote. Anyone who believes they are a victim of deceptive practices or price gouging is encouraged to file a complaint online at the Attorney General's website or by calling 1-800-771-7755. Read more about this story in the Ravenna News Herald.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a chance of showers mainly between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with the temperature high near 42 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with the temperature low of around 28 degrees. And on Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 35 degrees. And snow showers are likely after 1 a.m. on Thursday night. It will be mostly cloudy with the temperature low of around 24 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Wednesday, January 5th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at WGXC, including at 11 a.m. It's time for Mayuka Fujina's Your Voice Touches My String show, where she plays music performed by one person playing one stringed instrument or using their soul voice. At noon, we head to Main Street in Catskill, where Spike Priggen is live with the two-hour Bedazzled Radio Hour, live from his Spike's Record Rack store on Main Street in Catskill. 3 p.m. on the Radio Survivor show, we hear from Monica De La Torre. She's assistant professor at the School of Transborder Studies at Arizona State University. Talks about the history of the influential Spanish language community radio station KDNA in Washington State. At 7 p.m., we're live with a simulcast of WBAI's Off the Hook show from the 2600.com hackers, talking about the latest in information technology. At 8 p.m., the year 1991 is taught at Rock and Roll High School. And then at 10 p.m., we're live with Jeff Economy from Ulster County with his Snack Point Charlie show. Then at midnight, we're live from Ulster County with Peter Aaron and his Go-Go Kitty show, simulcast from Radio Kingston until 2 a.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
This Thursday, January 6th, is the one-year anniversary of an attempted coup in this country where a group of people tried to overthrow the government, throw out the election of Joe Biden, even though there was no voter fraud and no court has found any voter fraud, and several policemen were killed, and few of the rioters have been held accountable so far. People across the country are rallying to observe this day across the country, including rallies in Albany and Williamstown, Massachusetts, locally. Go to January6UnityDay.org for more information about these efforts around the country on Thursday, January 6th.
Got questions about technology, cybersecurity? Whether it's a remote car starter or jellyfish, try your luck at stumping our panel on the Thingularity radio program. Just send your questions to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. That is CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com. And one of our many interns will be electroshocked into inducing an answer for your listening pleasure. Listen to the Thingularity Radio program every first Thursday of each month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org. Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, January 5th. Early this morning, we see evenly broken up temperatures across the area. 24 in New Salem and 26 degrees up in Twilight Park. Today, in absolute terms, falls into cold territory. Layer up and protect from rain. The morning starts frozen with warm rain entering the region and causing spots of freezing rain throughout the area. Plan a little extra time and check traffic conditions before leaving the house. A high temperature of 42 happens at 3 p.m. and rain tapers off by dark. Overnight, temps fall to 28 degrees before bouncing back up to 37 degrees tomorrow afternoon. Thursday night, the fun starts. Light snow falls before midnight as temperatures drop to 25 degrees. By midnight, a dusting will be on the ground. By dawn, a half inch to an inch should be down. And that's about 1 to 3 centimeters if you like round numbers. Temperatures will rise to 32 degrees by 3 p.m. and snow will taper off, ending before dark, dropping another half inch or 2 centimeters through the day. Wind is expected to kick up, so blowing snow will be a factor. Travel could get pretty restrictive. Saturday looks dry with a high of 29. Sunday, snow, rain, and a high of 38. The mess will come into focus as it gets closer. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:45 a.m., then low tide at 11:07 a.m., high tide again at 5:04 p.m., and low tide again at 11:49 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 36 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:23 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see extra geomagnetic activity is expected on Sunday as a solar wind stream is due to arrive. Solar wind speed is currently 419 kilometers per second at 5.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board with good conditions expected below 4 megahertz. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 12. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. And if you have any questions or suggestions, please send them to weather@wgxe.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Al Margolis of Chester, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You gotta try something.
You got a job at the radio station?
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
was the king of America, but it was just a boulevard of broken dreams, tripped through with mirrors and with chemicals, the words of love and whispers and the acts of love and screams. I wish that I could push a button and talk in the past and not the present.
I should just comment in fairness to James Madison that these remarks are not quite correct. The reason was that Madison was pre-capitalist. He's like just about everybody, you know, Adam Smith, you know, all the great figures from the Enlightenment, they're mostly pre-capitalist and very anti-capitalist in conception. You know, you can't say they're anti-capitalist because there was no modern industrial capitalism around for them to have an opinion about. And this is a matter of interpretation. You know, it's a matter of how you read texts, so you can read them a lot of different ways. But the way I read them, they were very anti-capitalist. That includes Adam Smith. And I think you can demonstrate that. But certainly Madison was. He believed that when he put power in the hands of the wealthy class of men, you know, the more capable set of men, the wealthy of the country, that they were going to be, as he put it, enlightened statesmen and benevolent philosophers who would devote themselves to the welfare of all. Okay, that's a very pre-capitalist conception, you know, that once you give power to the hands of the rich, they're just going to be benevolent philosophers and they're going to devote themselves, you know, every minute of their day to the welfare of everyone else. I mean, it's like what corporate executives tell you, you know, they're sort of understand, you have to say that, but by now, you know, nobody, I suppose, nobody believes it except the people who read these, you know, watch these movies, which show you how it works. In those days, Madison really believed it, and he very quickly discovered that it wasn't true. Within a few years, by, I think, 1792, he was already very upset about the fate of this democratic experiment, which he thought was failing. He condemned what he called the daring depravity of the times as the business leaders who have now been given power use that power, he said, to become the tools and tyrants of government. They overwhelm government with their powers and combinations, and they're bribed by its largesses. And they're just serving self-interest, you know, not the interest of the general public, and he thought that was deplorable and so on, but that's because he began to, he perceived the way the system that he had designed was actually functioning.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
To being open to a rules change that would create a nuclear option, it's very, very difficult.
Senator Joe Manchin is skeptical about changing the legislative filibuster. The West Virginia Democrat met Tuesday with party leaders who want to change the chamber's rules to pass voting rights legislation. While Republicans maintain the effort to power grab, Democrat Raphael Warnock of Georgia argued that democracy won't evolve without a rules change.
I had hoped they would have allowed us to have a debate on the voting bills that are in front of us. That's what they blocked three times in the Senate, our ability to have a bipartisan debate.
Republican Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa countered that ending the filibuster would be the end of the Senate as originally created.
The Senate is different than the House. The Senate is here as that saucer for the teacup so it can help the tea cool. And we need that because we have certainly seen a whole lot of hot mess coming over from the House.
It takes 60 votes to end debate on legislation in the Senate, which is split 50-50. As he addressed the rise in COVID cases spurred by the highly transmissible Omicron variant, President Joe Biden said efforts to expand access to testing are underway.
I know we're all tired and frustrated about the pandemic. These coming weeks are going to be challenging.
COVID-19 testing is being expanded at the Capitol after the Office of the Attending Physician reported a dramatic rise in the center's positive rate. The office also recommended House and Senate offices maximize telework to reduce in-person contact. The one-year anniversary of the January 6 riots is tomorrow, and U.S. Capitol Police Chief Thomas Manger says he isn't overly concerned about planned demonstrations.
There's no intelligence that indicates that there would be any problems.
Former President Donald Trump is canceling his Mar-a-Lago news conference originally planned for the anniversary, citing what he calls false accusations from the media and the House Select Committee investigating January 6. The panel says it now wants to interview Fox News host Sean Hannity after text messages revealed Hannity's concerns about Trump's strategy and conduct before and after the attack. Several Republican senators are blasting the Biden administration for an overdue report on the vetting of roughly 78,000 Afghans evacuated during the U.S. withdrawal.
We want to know who these people are. They might possibly have a record, a criminal record. They might have terrorist affiliations. And that's why you need to do the proper screening and vetting.
That's Rob Portman of Ohio. The report was required by November 30th as part of the emergency appropriations package signed into law on September 30th. In California, Larry Elder announced he will not challenge Governor Gavin Newsom in November. The Republican who earned the most votes in the failed recall election to replace Newsom now plans to launch a political action committee focused on legislative races. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Today on Wednesday, January 5th, Governor Kathy Hochul gives her first State of the State address, and anyone can watch it at the governor.ny.gov website, where there'll be a live stream available. That's at 1 p.m. today, January 5th, the first State of the State address from Governor Kathy Hochul.
Baby, we'll be making love again. We'll be going down so deep, the river's gonna weep, and the mountain's gonna shout amen. It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Noreen McKee, who's on several boards here in the Capital Region, including the Justice Center of Rensselaer County, Unity House, the League of Women Voters of Rensselaer County, and was the 2021 recipient of the New York Civil Liberties Union Carol S. Knox Award for her work promoting voter rights in Rensselaer County. Noreen recently wrote an op-ed in the Times Union titled "Teetering on Life Support: Change in Rensselaer County Election Process is Imperative." Noreen, welcome back to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you.
This is a serious title. I was wondering if you could outline some of the issues that you outline in your op-ed related to the election process in Rensselaer County.
The title, when I sent this in the subject line, I said, "Is democracy dying in Rensselaer County?" I had huge concerns about it because I was so much involved in the League of Women Voters and our work there. We put on a huge Get Out the Vote campaign. We worked very hard to get candidates to participate in debates and forums, basically to no avail. We have a website called vote411.org to inform the voters about the candidates running for office and the issues that are important to them. We had a terrible time getting candidates to respond to us. The Democrats, they responded fairly well, but we barely got any Republicans to respond. We had a few judges, but other than that, it was clear that there was this opposition almost to talking to the voters and letting the voters know where they stood on the issues and what the issues are. And we certainly have issues. So it was distressing.
So besides the lack of willingness to share information, you also talk about something which you call the Republicans hijacking the working families party line. Can you go more into this?
You know, the Republican Party during the primary, they worked very hard to get Republican foot soldiers, more or less, to change their voter registration from Republican to working families. And then they came in at the last minute with all these absentee votes that knocked out four of the six endorsed candidates by the real Working Families Party and replaced them with Republicans. That was also quite distressing to see a major political party, you know, go ahead and take over a party that had, you know, that doesn't really reflect their values. And I felt like the Democrats were in total disarray this election season. You know, they started off by discarding the two leaders of the county legislature that have been standing up for Democratic values, and they didn't endorse them. They discarded them. And the folks that they did endorse, I mean, they had one elected official who barely made it to any meetings this year. On top of that, you also had voter suppression that we had worked on for several years to bring early voting into the heart of Troy so that minorities and low-income voters would have equal access to early voting. First of all, we couldn't get them to put an early voting site in Troy at all. And this is both Democrat and Republican commissioners. They both have to agree on the sites. And so it was clear from the beginning that, you know, word came down from whoever, the bosses, that there's not going to be an early voting site in Troy. If it weren't for the amendment that Senator Breslin and Assemblyman John McDonald presented, we would have never gotten an early voting site in Troy at all. So when they had to put one in Troy, they put it on the outskirts of the city, on the east side, not exactly accessible to people who rely on public transportation. It was a long battle. And finally, after almost 3 years of advocacy, the attorney general had to come in and file a lawsuit, and it was successful. And that's how we got an early voting site in Troy at the atrium. And the candidate interviews, you know, we had several women of color who ran for office, especially here in Troy. And people don't know this, but you have to go to become an endorsed candidate. You have to go before this committee, these committee people, and they interview you. It's my understanding that these interviews were hostile for these women. And, you know, this is not the way elections should be run. This is not democratic.
Well, that is already a huge list, and I'm sure you're not done yet, Noreen, but just to think about this time we are in, we are at the year anniversary of what folks are labeling the insurrection in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. You reference a book in your writing, How Democracies Die, and you talk about it being slow and barely visible steps. Can you relate this to what you've been talking about?
I have been very concerned about our democracy, and I never thought that I would ever see that in this country. It was just totally a shock. And then going through this whole election since, you know, before the primary, when they came out with the endorsements or lack thereof, that I became very concerned about this election. I realized that this was happening right here in front of my eyes. After the election, I felt I really had to write about it. And I don't think people really know or knew what was going on. And I think it's important for people to know how their democracy is being hijacked by, you know, people that we elect in most cases, and in some cases we don't elect, who are not really representing our interests at all.
What should we be paying attention to now as we're moving forward, and how can we pressure folks in the Democratic establishment to do more, to do better?
Yeah, the norms are eroded. You know, we just slowly you know, like the book says, barely visible. We don't notice them on a day-to-day basis. And then we become kind of immune to these things. And here's a good example. You know, we just had our county executive was just elected, landslide victory. And after he's elected, the voters find out that, you know, he's indicted on criminal charges for stealing from his campaign. And this was the last campaign in 2017. And, you know, you say, why didn't we know about this? Voters need to be informed. We're not really being informed as we should. So he's indicted a couple weeks later, this outrageous 17% increase in his salary is passed by the Republican-dominated legislature without any input from the public. And after the budget for the year had been approved, why weren't these salaries in the budget, proposed in the budget before the election? Because that's when the budget was approved. And at that time, the public is allowed to go up there and voice their opinions about the budget. So this went through on December 21st, the Christmas week, and when many, many people are not paying attention. And you just say, wow, here, if this isn't an erosion and a weakening of our political institutions, nothing is. Our only choice is to, yeah, pressure our elected officials. I mean, clearly they're not representing us, you know, when they pass these things without our input. Hopefully people will raise their voices at the public forum this Wednesday night, January 5th at 6 o'clock. And we urge the public to voice your opinion. Let them know how you feel. And I think that's the only thing we can do now is to pressure our elected officials, our representatives, make sure they're representing us. And, you know, as citizens, that's our responsibility. You know, in a democracy, one of the responsibilities of citizenship is to vote and to make yourself aware of the issues. So part of this is also on us.
It's Andrea Cunliffe here from the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm speaking today with Joe Giardina, who's the program director of Rehabilitation Through the Arts.
We are an arts and corrections organization. We provide all different art forms, theater, dance, music, visual arts, and creative writing in 6 facilities in New York State. So we're in 3 maximum security facilities and 3 medium security facilities, including women's. We work at Bedford Hills, which is the women's maximum, Sing Sing Correctional Facility in Greenhaven. Those are our maximum facilities. And Fishkill, Woodburn, and Taconic are mediums, Taconic being a women's medium security facility. We work with teaching artists. Those are professional artists who teach. They provide 12-week workshops once per week in all different art forms. Our goal is never to make anybody into a professional artist. Sometimes magic happens in that people who are incarcerated become professional artists. But our goal really is to use the arts to prepare men and women for reentry into society so that when they go back to their communities, they have the skills to be successful with employment, with their families, with their communities, because we believe the arts does have that transformative power to do that sort of thing and teach people skills to be successful in their lives.
How long has this been going on? How did this begin?
It got started in 1996. Our founding executive director, Catherine Vokens, was at Sing Sing Correctional Facility. Her husband was teaching a ministry class, I believe, and the graduation for that ministry class, she was there, she was attending, and she just happened to turn to somebody, an incarcerated person at Sing Sing, and said, "Do you guys have a theater program here?" And the guy said, "No." And she said, "Well, let's start one." Even though she doesn't really have experience or a background in theater, she thought that, you know, the arts would be a great thing to do at Sing Sing. And that's how it got started, and it grew from there. But the men at Sing Sing recognized the rehabilitative value of what they were doing in the rehabilitation through the arts. That started in 1996, and it's been growing since then.
What's the place of art in society and in a prison. It's been confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the general population doesn't necessarily view the arts. They view it as entertainment. But there's so much arts education in the public school system that's been recognized as very valuable. That's not across the country. I think that, you know, places like New York City certainly recognizes the value of arts education and provide arts education in a variety of ways, including hiring full-time teachers to teach the arts, but also using the wealth of arts organizations that are located in New York City to provide educational programming during the day, during the school day, in the public schools. But in terms of corrections, how that's valuable and why it's recognized as valuable in the arts is Brian Fisher was the superintendent at Sing Sing when we got started in 1996. And he was a visionary in many ways, and that he saw the value of it. And what's really interesting is not what I say about how it's valuable, but when you talk to somebody who's incarcerated and they say, you know, this is what it's taught me. It's taught me to think in a different way from the way I had been thinking all my life, which was, you know, not necessarily positive outlook on life. Or, you know, many of the people that we work with come from disadvantaged neighborhoods and communities.
You brought up a subject that I was actually going to kind of dwell on. It's like, is there something in society today that we're not giving people the benefit of arts as a social effect that kind of can help to develop?
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, people in underserved communities don't necessarily have the opportunity to engage in the arts. And so the choices that people make are limited in some way. You know, like there's one guy who talks about he had a limited vocabulary. And when he ran out of the words that he could use, he turned to violence. And his participation in not only rehabilitation through the arts, but the college programs that they provide at some of the facilities taught him other ways to communicate. But that's one of the big things in theater or the arts is you have to communicate. You have to be able to find a way to use words to get what you want. And so that changed his life entirely because he started to say, okay, I don't have to turn to violence. I can communicate something to you so that it will make sense to you. And I'll understand what you're saying to me so that I don't get to my place of anger and turn to violence.
Words and literature, but theater or dance or visual arts, it gives people an opportunity to express themselves.
Yeah, it's not only that, though. We have this thing called a skill wheel, and it connects the various components of an art form. For instance, when you engage in a dance program, what do? You start using your body differently. You have more control over your body. You're working usually as an ensemble because you're part of a dance company. And if you align that with employment, for instance, what is the thing that most workplaces want? They want a team. And to be a part of that team, you have to work in unison with others on your team. And if you